It is time for, hopefully, our conversation that we have with the Berkshire Edge every week at this time. You'll find them at theberkshireedge.com. Let's see if we connected.
Marcy, I'm here. Yeah. I will get David in 1 second.
Okay. Well, when David joins in, that'll be absolutely fine.
And
yes. All right.
In the meantime, how are you all today?
We are awake, and we have sun, yeah. and you know what? We're not in Washington, D.C., so we're fine.
Exactly. I know. And that's quite a little hot spot.
2020 just keeps getting stranger and stranger.
Oh, my God.
Just when you think.
This last time I remember a year like that was 1968. Do you remember that? Every day there was some new news.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing is
anyway,
that.
Let me find David. David?
You think that just when things are. Just when things are done and over, things get crazier. Well, anyway.
Yes.
So has David been found?
He has been found, and he's on the way. I'm so
okay.
Sorry.
Well, why don't we start off? We'll start off with your first story, and that is the exchange student at Simon's Rock from Africa explains what it's like to be African in a largely white New England town.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And this is a young man who actually just sent his article into us, and he's a very good writer. He talks about what it's like to be an African in this white community, and it's interesting because the PBS NewsHour did a little show recently about racism in small towns, and they focused on Great Barrington, and they used actually some footage that The Edge had produced, and they interviewed this young woman who was also Ethiopian, who had been adopted by a family in Great Barrington, and so grew up here. She's now in college, but she also talked about how difficult it was how odd it was to be, one of the only black people in this town. And this young man at Simon's Rock is saying the same thing, that, people have no idea what Africa is like. I mean, he's saying, some people think it's a fantasy land of wildlife and simple living. Other people think it's the proverbial heart of darkness, a place retarded by the uncivilized culture and poor virtue of its indigents. I mean, you see, he writes beautifully. So, anyway, he's saying, it's a very interesting statement, that it's not just fighting against racism, it's also fighting against ignorance. That America has no idea, most Americans have no idea what the rest of the world's like. And, and this young woman also that had, that we had done some, she had become active in the Black Lives Matter when she was home from college in the spring, and she was saying the same thing, which she said, people just don't have any idea who she is.
It's funny. That's one of the reasons why we have a show like Arja on, because it really, we just did a whole thing where they're just now finally being hit in the small town of Jaisalmer. May I tell you, the small town of Jaisalmer in India, a small town is 600,000 people. Okay.
Yeah.
And they don't have enough health care, and now they're having a lot of deaths out of nowhere, and people don't understand what it's like. Americans, most Americans anyway, what it's like to live in a foreign country. I remember when the Olympics were being held in Japan, some people over here were offended about the bathrooms in Japan. Well, they should install bathrooms like we have in America. Well, no. I mean, it runs the game. You can go to, if you take a piece of toilet, a roll of toilet paper to places in this world, they'll look at you and they won't have any idea what it is. Americans don't realize that. They're totally, even though they say we're all connected because it's computers and it's a smaller world. Well, you know what? We're lagging behind that because there's so many people in this country that don't know what it's like in other countries and don't understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I speak to exchange students from Housatonic and from Hotchkiss all the time, and I love the way they adapt, because they do adapt and they do learn and they bring back information about us to their countries.
Right, I'm sure they do. It's sort of like, you know, the stereotype of the American tourist and the speaking English to somebody in Europe, and if the person doesn't understand, the American just talks louder. As if, you know, if they just shout at them, they'll understand English better.
It's funny. I'm looking at your second story, and Jill and I the other day, I got a note that said, "Marshall, do you know what the Great Barrington Proclamation is?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I think it just came out. It's from a think tank in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Yes, it is Great Barrington, Massachusetts. And son of a gun, there your second story that you're highlighting is the American Institute for Economic Research and their Great Barrington Proclamation."
Yes. David.
Yeah, they're the AIER is kind of I don't know how to.
They're a free market.
Free market, tech. Yeah, free market only. it's kind of unrealistic, but in any case.
Well, they call themselves they are one of the oldest and most respected nonpartisan economic research and advocacy organizations in the country.
I'm glad you said that, because somebody said to me, "Well, this must be a fairly new operation." So I said, "No, I think it goes back to the 1930s.
It's been there for a long time."
Yeah, and
it has an interesting story, which somebody once told me, but I can't remember. But it's been there for 40 or 50 years.
Yeah. But it kind of reminds me of Ayn Rand.
Yeah, right.
if you've ever read any of her work, but in any case, they don't believe in vaccinations. They think that it should be herd immunity that solves the coronavirus pandemic, even though millions will die as a result until we get to herd immunity.
The Great Barrington Declaration, endorsed as a concept of focused protection, and it had, as of Tuesday, it had been signed by more than 27,000 people. The Declaration decries lockdown policies, which it says are producing devastating effects on short- and long-term public health, including lower childhood vaccination rates, worsening cardiovascular disease outcomes, fewer cancer screenings, and deteriorating mental health. I mean, all of these things are true. Our reporter says actually that the data do support many of these conclusions, but there's a reason. I mean, it's not like, it's because people aren't going to doctors and they're not going to schools. They're not getting cancer screenings.
Well,
they are deteriorating.
There's that old-fashioned statement, for every action, there's a reaction. And you wouldn't, for everything that you're going to do that's positive, there will be some side effects to it that are not, no matter what it is in life. I mean, it's just the way it is. I mean, you look at medicine, how medicine has changed and grown over the years. You look at science. You look at even cutting your lawn. Hey, beautiful. Right. Cut your lawn. It's a beautiful lawn. Well, the more you cut it, the less that the wildlife has places to hide and live in it. I mean, so for every good thing that comes out of something that's good, there are a couple of side effects that maybe aren't good, but it's in a short-term basis.
Yeah, and they are advocating herd immunity.
Yeah.
But what the Washington Post, according to analysis by the Washington Post, it would require more than 2 million deaths to reach a 65% threshold of herd immunity, assuming the virus has a 1% fatality rate. So it means. On the other hand, these folks, just sort of reminds me of Ayn Rand. this is the most compassionate approach.
Right.
Basically.
Now, herd immunity, you know, can be reached either by 70% of the population getting sick, or vaccines. The vaccines, you know, it's estimated that 94% of the population must be immune to interrupt the chain of transmission. So there would be a huge number of deaths, and we saw that actually. We saw those statistics somewhere else, that the number of people that have to die for us to have herd immunity is really very high. So millions will die.
Let's move on.
It's interesting because, you know, this AIER, I actually have heard people talk positively about AIER, that they try to put out information to educate people about the markets and the free markets. And, they've quietly been around for a long time and apparently have an enormous following if they've got 27,000 people who have signed this Great Barrington Declaration.
Oh, that's gone up now. It's 62,548 general public, 2,887 medical and public health scientists, and 3,966 medical practitioners.
They have a huge network then.
But I did hear you say that they're against vaccination.
They're not against vaccination.
Right. Okay.
No, they're not. They're actually complaining that fewer people are getting vaccinated.
Right. No, I just heard that and I wanted to clarify.
No, they're not against vaccination.
All right. Well, let's go to some good news here.
Anyway, it's an interesting article, and it's here, and I think people will find it interesting.
Fans of Tanglewood and the Boston Symphony Orchestra, music director has signed a 3-year contract extension.
Yes, Andrus Nelson. Just yesterday, there was an announcement from Tanglewood that that Andrus, even though he hasn't been here this year, the public loves him, so he's...
Yep, he has a new 3-year contract with the Boston Symphony.
Right.
You know, it's funny, people have said to me about contracts being signed and about, especially in the arts, And how can people sign contracts? How can they plan on next year when what's going on when they're closed? And I say very simply, you have to continue normally on certain things under the assumption that things will get back to some sort of normal. So you've, as a business and as a nonprofit, as Tanglewood, of course you've got to set up and keep your music director. And of course you've got to do the basic things to keep your company intact.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, it's just progressive thinking. You can't just sit here and say, okay, we're in a pandemic. Everything stops until then. You can't do that. You just can't.
No, you can't. And actually, I don't know if we talked about this last week, I think, but we have a charming film streaming on our site called The Actors Came Back.
That's our next,
It's our next story in the list. There's a local playwright and director named Michael Brady, who at the beginning of this pandemic wrote a poem, which we also had on The Edge, called The Actors Came Back. And it's really about the resilience of the arts. And how over the years in plagues and political turmoil and everything, eventually the actors come back and the theater resumes. And so a filmmaker named Tim Newman, who had a very important Hollywood career and who now lives in the Berkshires, has produced a wonderful little film to go with Michael Brady's poem. And
poem is you know, as many stanzas, and different actors and actresses take different parts of it to read it, and it's really quite wonderful.
Yes, it's, and also many arts organizations, the leaders of arts organizations have participated, and they're reading parts of it. So, it's, I mean, I encourage people to, it's you know, you go to theberkshireedge.com/theactorscameback
or you can just go to the site and click on the story itself, and you can click on the picture of the that goes with the story. And
yeah, if you scroll down the homepage, you'll find all our stories.
You know, it's interesting when you say that, because here at the Sharon Playhouse and also at the Drive-In Theater in Armenia, the Brothers Drive-In in Armenia, Broadway shows that were shut down and we're planning on doing these opening have come up here now. And we've had three or four of them, because the Playhouse has an outdoor theater and the Drive-In is outdoor, and they've done their shows as presentation shows, and they just love, the actors just love getting back into the business of acting and singing.
Well, fortunately, we haven't had a bout of, you know, we haven't had an early winter, put it that way, so people can be outside right now, but
we're very worried about.
We're worried about what's going to happen when winter really arrives.
Well, they'll just have to put a bubble over Great Barrington.
That's right. Well, they'll have to put a bubble over New England.
Name it the W.E.B. Du Bois bubble.
But we, you know, if you look through the Edge, you will see that there are lots of things that are going on. I mean, the actors do come back, and the arts do come back, and, you know, the Turnpark Art Space in West...
Well, that's...
Here's Chick.
The Guild of Berkshire Artists is having a multimedia installation called 6 Feet Apart, 0 Degrees of Separation. It's an outdoor multimedia installation that begins this weekend. I know that the Mahaley is having a virtual party. Lauren Clark Fine Art has an online, a new online show called Kabuki 2. There are, let's see, we have something called From Sharon to, anyway, there are presentations, there are speeches being made, you know, conversations online. There's really a huge amount to do despite all of this. I mean, we went to an opening of a an outdoor sculpture show at Gedney Farm last Saturday, which was extremely well attended, and it was all outdoors. You could walk around and look at the sculptures. Which is
and you can
there,
still do that, yes.
Yeah, you can still do that, right. So, you know, if you take a look at the Berkshire Edge calendar, right, which is, you know, continues to people, this is a calendar where we invite the public to post events. And they certainly are posting events. And if you go to the Berkshire Edge calendar, which you can reach either through the Berkshire Edge, and go to the menu and click on calendar, or you can just go to berkshirescalendar.com. It'll take you directly there, and you'll see that we have lots of things to do. The public posts its own events, the listings are very extensive and very interesting.
And let's go to your final story, because we have about a minute and a half left, and that is Carol Owens.
Oh, yes, right. David, do you want to do
that? Oh, yeah. Carol Owens is one of our columnists. She writes a column called Connections, in which she connects, you know, historical events with current events. And her particular column this week, she comes out every Tuesday. This particular column is about how Great Barrington got its name, which I think is very amusing. I think people will find the history of how Great Barrington was named to be interesting, because we were we were not called Great Barrington at first.
Was it just?
I won't give it away. They have to read it to find out. But it's interesting how, you know, when you think about towns and places have always had their name, but not so. So it's an interesting look at the history of how we of the naming of towns and counties.
Can I just make one more plug? The Mahawi is celebrating its 15th anniversary this Sunday, October 11th, with an online celebration called Moving People, Moving Mountains. And there will be performances by Brian Stokes Mitchell, Emmanuel Axe, Roseanne Cash, Michael Feinstein, the Paul Taylor Dance Company, John Pizzarella and Jessica Mulaski, China Forbes of the Pink Martini, and more. This is in honor of Lola Jaffe, who was the founder of the Mahawi.
She and her husband.
She was the one who did it, actually. Yeah. Her husband did the community center. So this is, you know, it's an online gala.
More information is available on your site,
Berkshire Edge.com. Yep, or at the Mahawi.org, MahawiPAC.org.
All right, guys, we'll speak to you next week.
Yep.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you. Have a good week, guys.
Bye.
That is the Berkshire Edge on air here on Robinhood Radio, the Berkshire Edge.com.